The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with one of my favorite people in the market, return guest Lisa DiZutti of Market Connections. Lisa, thanks for taking a long drive in today.
You're welcome, Mark. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. 66 is always a crapshoot.
Yeah, and if you're outside D.C., outside the D.C. area, and you don't know what 66 is, it's one of those roads where if you listen to the traffic reports in the morning, it's always at the top of the list. That and 95 down around Occoquan.
Yes, so. but many thanks to TOP for the traffic reports.
So. Oh, there you go. So that's why we have that sister station, so they can do that traffic stuff.
Yes.
All right. Market Connections recently released its ninth
year. Next year will be 10 years. It's hard to believe.
Federal Media and Marketing Study.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to focus on today exclusively. So sit back, relax, take notes. And if you want to download the slides, go to marketconnectionsinc.com and look for the 2017 Federal Media and Marketing Study, and you can download the overview. You have to pay for the full report, but I'll tell you what, it's worth it if you spend money in, well, you'll see in a few minutes. So Lisa,
I'll just add to that it is actually an online data tool. There's so much data. So when you subscribe, you get access to 2 years worth of data, all this year's data plus last year's. And so it's a lot for government contractors to look at and
see what's trending if you're going at least 2 years.
Yeah, if you're data geeks like we are, then you can have fun trending all day long.
Well, you know, I'm just glad that you guys do the data stuff because I don't.
Yeah, and you know, and you alluded to this, the government contracting community is spending a lot of money trying to reach federal decision makers. And this is a tool that helps them select media outlets that are going to be most effective in reaching their target audience. So it's something everybody should be looking at.
Yes. And not just the media outlets, but ways to build that trust factor that we've been hearing about for years and years and years.
Absolutely.
I've been talking about for years and you've been talking about for years
and
years. So anyway, let's start with a little background on this thing. We are in year nine.
Yes, and it is a tool that covers over 200 media outlets, including print, digital, and broadcast, from federal and congressional publishers, business and general news media, technology publications. We cover social media, lifestyle properties. We also ask about events. It's really a comprehensive, very broad list, and we target exclusively the federal audience in this particular study. And every year, including this year, we have over 3,000 respondents. So sample size of 3,000 plus federal respondents. They represent over 25 different job functions and 40 product and service purchase categories. And we also usually year to year, this year no different, have a good mix of civilian and defense respondents. We get a representation from across all of the GSA regions, and it very closely mirrors what you see in the overall federal population.
Okay, so give me a little bit more on the demos in DC, outside of DC, age.
Yeah,
geezer versus tyke.
You know, it's interesting. we drilled down a little bit more this year on age of the federal decision maker population. And it's a highly educated and older audience, and it has been for a number of years. 80% have at least a college degree, and 86% are 45 or older. And in that 55-plus category, we continue to see that grow every year. So there's not been the mass exodus of retirement that everyone thought that there might be.
10 years ago that I predicted?
Yeah. We haven't seen it. You know,
no, we haven't.
And it's, I'm sure, I haven't looked at the stats, but I'm sure no different if you look at just the general population. We are all working longer. We're living longer. We're working longer in some cases because we have to. So I think you're seeing a similar trend in government.
I'm doing it because it's still fun.
You know, what we also saw this year is a continued decline in those that are 35 or younger. And some data to support what we're seeing in this study comes from the Partnership for Public Service. They had a study just out that shows millennials, those that are under 30, are now avoiding working for the federal government in record numbers. One of the quotes that I read when I was looking at this study said, yes, they must be smelling the stench of rotting morale within the federal workplace. I'm not sure that's the reason, but definitely not seeing an influx of younger individuals into the federal workforce. So I think that's going to create an interesting dynamic as the years go on. The federal workforce is aging. They're having difficulty bringing younger individuals into the federal workforce. So I think you're going to begin to see, and maybe even are seeing now, that skills gap. It's only going to get worse. And that may, in the end, represent an opportunity for government contractors in terms of the degree of outsourcing that we'll be seeing.
Okay.
Hard to know.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if you just said this or not, but 46% of the...
46% plan on retiring in the next 5 years. I'm somewhat skeptical about that because I think that's always a rolling 5 years. I'm going to retire in 5 years and then people don't. That 5 years turns into 10 years. But that is what we saw on the survey this year, 46%.
Well, it was about 10 years ago that I predicted, a massive turnover over a 3-year period.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen, partly because of the Great Recession.
Right.
And probably a big part because of the Great Recession, and partly because I talk to a lot of senior feds. I've known these people for years and years, and they aren't golf fanatics or boaters. They like what they do. They know they're contributing, and they wonder what their value proposition will be if they leave.
Yeah, they like what they do. They've enjoyed what they're doing. They're comfortable with what they're doing. And, I think the next 3 to 5 years will be telling to see if we see those numbers decline at all.
Yeah.
The economy's improving. Maybe we will. I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical about that 46% that will actually pull the trigger on retirement in the next 5 years.
Remember Bob Greaves?
Yes.
Okay. Bob was going to retire about 10 or 12 years ago. But actually, it was longer than that. It was after he was at NAPA, and he wasn't going to go back to energy. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from somebody at the Justice Department saying, hey, we really need somebody senior to run our program that sends money out to state and local law enforcement. Do you know anybody? And I called Bob and said, hey, you interested? And he talked to him, and, didn't retire.
I was going to say, had he retired, he had not left yet. So he just shifted.
Yeah.
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 And then you'll see that happening more and more.
Doing the same thing for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll see that happen more and more,
yeah.
I think.
So Bob and I still communicate via rumor and innuendo, but I think he's dreading the next phone call. Bob, I got a call from this agency.
I have a new job for you.
But it'll be fun.
Yeah. So I really think that the federal workforce is going to be challenged if they can't do something to turn around that the influx of younger millennials.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we do have a 46% attrition over the next few years,
or let's face
and there's
it, even,
nobody filling in the blanks.
Or even half that.
Yeah.
I mean, 20%. You're going to have a huge issue.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, the companies that aren't hiring 50-year-olds, maybe the 50-year-olds will start looking at government.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's going to put a lot of pressure on federal employees. As I said, though, it may be an opportunity for the government contracting community. We'll see.
We'll see what's what. We're going to take an early break so we can spend a lot of time on the next segment, which will cover who's hot in media. So you're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. You can find Lisa's stuff at marketconnectionsinc.com. And you can find Lisa, two Z's, two T's, on LinkedIn. We shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with my friend Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections. We are talking about the Federal Media and Marketing Study, the 2017 version, year nine. So over the past several years, this little tiny pub Federal Times thingy has been migrating up the food chain.
Yes.
So where are they now?
They are still at the top when you look across the entire sample or across the entire federal audience. They are at the top, as is Defense News, in terms of top federal print, I'll underline print publications. Mm-hmm. USA Today and the Washington Post top the list for business and news publications, just general business and news.
Federal Times and Defense News both have pretty good. They have very good websites too.
They do. And if you look at, again, sort of sticking with federal focus, govexec.com, as you said, and Federal Times top the list for websites. The general websites were weather.com and cnn.com. But the one of the things I always like to point out to people, Mark, when we're talking about this data and who's number one, who's number two, you have to remember it's across a very broad sample. If you use the tool and you focus on your target audience, those media outlets will change.
Yeah,
so, you know, Fox News, for example, performs significantly better with an IT audience. So you have to look at, you know, your target audience and where they sit. If you look inside, outside the Beltway, that list is going to change. If you look at, you know, those that are making purchase decisions for software, that list is going to change. So you have to bear that in mind when you look at who the top performers are.
Right. Understood. And that's one of the reasons to, and I'm not going to push this, it's one of the reasons to subscribe to the tool.
Yeah.
But what about those, let's call them the second tier, especially on the websites, because people are more prone to browsing than they are to picking up hard copy.
Yes.
Has anybody moved up significantly on the web issues?
You know, I don't know that we saw any significant movers when you looked at that. The list stays pretty consistent year over year, I would say.
All right. but you know, the one of the things that you mentioned is an increased appetite for pretty much all media.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting trend when we looked at it this year, I thought. And really took us a little bit by surprise, although since looking at the results, we're seeing a similar trend across the commercial world, which really validates what we saw in the federal space. And that is, and it makes sense when you think about it, media consumption across all major outlets was up this year, and it was up in print as well, which I did not expect. And I think a big piece of it, I mean, there are a lot of factors that contribute to it, but a big piece of that really is the effect, I think, that the election and the fake news phenomenon. We had fake news that was going on before the election. It continues after the election. And I think that it will continue in the next several years. I don't think it's going to be going away. Someone asked me when we did our live event, do you expect these numbers to come back down next year? And I don't. Because I think that people they have a higher distrust of the media than ever before. They're looking at more sources than they ever have. And that they're, you know, gathering different opinions and then making their own. And let's face it, it's not just that. We all have access. We have such easy access to so many different news sources. Before my first cup of coffee is finished, I will look at probably three or four different news sites on my phone before I get through a cup of coffee.
Let's talk about that access thing for a minute, because one of the slides in the part that you can download for free talked about barriers in federal agencies. So, and it amazes me, but a lot of people still don't know this. There's a lot of spam barrier in the federal government. Some agencies don't accept HTML email. Some don't, most federal agencies don't accept attachments. So run down your list. Go ahead.
I will, but I did just want to add to that. I too am amazed. And it wasn't that too many months ago. I was talking with someone and they said, yes, you know, we're just not getting, our emails are just not getting through to defense agencies.
Really?
And we started talking about it and I said, are you using HTML? Well, yeah. I'm like, well, that's why. I mean, it's one of the reasons. And I, too, was surprised that people are...
And we have video files attached. They aren't getting through either.
But, you know, I always say it's not rocket science to be successful in marketing. And it's all about doing the basics and doing the basics well. And so many people don't.
And I still get calls from people asking for email lists.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah. So, barriers, access barriers. Via government equipment. So you have to keep that in mind. That was the question. And the top barrier is that some news websites are blocked on government equipment. And then you go down the list and the things that we're talking about, Mark, you know, unable to stream video, strict spam filters, you know, slow downloads, no cookies allowed. So, and the list gets pretty small once you go down below that. But I think the important thing to remember is that they are accessing information on their mobile devices.
Right.
So just because 45% say they're not, they don't have access via their government issued equipment, that doesn't mean that you're not reaching them, because they're viewing content on their mobile devices.
Right.
Their own personal devices.
And I remember when BlackBerries were more prevalent, I knew feds that were carrying three devices, you know, a BlackBerry,
absolutely,
a government mobile phone, not BlackBerry, and their own mobile phone. So.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is that, you know, in the federal space and in the commercial space as well, people over the last year, people have watched more, read more, they're listening to more, they're streaming more, and they're looking at more that's been posted more than ever. And fake news, I think, is the driver of this. And yeah, a recent study, you I think, turned me on to Marketing Sherpa a number of years ago.
We went to one of their events up in New York.
Yeah, it was a great event.
A decade ago, yeah.
Great event. It was a long time ago. But they have a new study.
Ann Holland, formerly of Jane's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have a new study out that shows the top five most trusted ad formats are what all of us would consider the traditional media, print, TV, direct mail, radio, out-of-home advertising. So I think, you know, looking at fake news, looking at that stat, that's why we saw an increase in TV this year in the study. That's why we saw an increase in print this year in the study. And we're seeing the same thing in the commercial world in similar studies. So
I was surprised that direct mail was in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think that, you know, the pendulum swinging back a little bit.
I mean, you know, for decades, you know, big part of my business was direct mail to government. So.
Yeah. Well, and I, for years, for the last few years anyway, have stopped saying print isn't dead. I used to say it, but I've stopped saying it because it has been kind of dead. But this is an interesting phenomenon. And I read an article just the other day. It was a company in the UK. And they took out a print ad, running a huge print advertising campaign, and the page is nothing more than their banner ad on that they're using on their digital campaigns in print.
Can you click
on
it?
And it says, for those of you that don't read digital ads or something. And, and so it's interesting, the resurgence of print.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Clever.
Clever. Yeah, I like that. Define out-of-home advertising for me. I'm not quite sure what this means.
Yeah, I think it's things like, you know, billboard, metro, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's traditionally what I consider to be out-of-home.
Okay.
But they're not consuming it you know, yeah. and consumers
my
are not in
my favorite out of home then is a when you're driving towards Fort Meade on any one of the four main entrances, 32 or 198. It's kind of pokes it both ways. There's those adopt a road signs. And when you're going to Fort Meade in the morning, you could sit in one spot for 10 or 15 minutes and you're looking at Praxis's name on this adopt a road sign. That's great advertising as long as there's no trash on the side of the road.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and as while we're still on talking about some of these different media outlets, I did want to mention, because I always feel that it's important to remind people about looking at differences, not just by job function or by agency, but you have to look at differences inside and outside the Beltway, because media consumption habits are different. And if you're peanut buttering one media strategy across the entire country, across the entire federal population, whether they're here or out on the West Coast, it's not going to be as effective because they do consume media differently.
Yeah. And, you know, just give Federal News Radio a plug here. I have listeners literally from around the world, and they're not tuning into me, you know, Monday at noon. They're hitting me on iTunes. They're going to the, you know, federalnewsradio.com and clicking through. Hopefully they're listening to a few more than just, well, me first and other people.
Right.
Well,
I love the fact this year that Fed News Radio took such a big jump in the study. I mean, a significant jump over last year. So I don't know that I can attribute all of that to you, Mark. But I know that, you know, as a whole, you guys have done a real marketing.
Well, I'm not an employee, so it's Lisa Wolf and Jason
but
and Tom.
Lisa and team have done a big marketing push over the last 12 to 18 months. And
it's a neat platform.
And you see the impact of it. You know, people like to say advertising doesn't work. Well, you know, I beg to differ. It does. And those results prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with Lisa DeZutti. We're discussing the 2017 Federal Media and Marketing Study that was released, about a month ago now. And if you missed the briefing, that was pretty cool, too. So, and this one, are you going to do another briefing in the spring?
No, we probably will not.
Okay, so it'll be next fall again.
But next fall again. We do the study in the summer.
I was hoping you'd do a content or something.
Oh, that we probably will. Absolutely.
In the spring.
We probably do three studies a year. So we will probably do some version of content in the spring, because we did content earlier this year, and we will probably repeat that again because it's such a hot topic and everyone's investing so many dollars in developing content.
Yeah. And there's two reasons for me to bring that up. Number one, when you go to the website, make sure you're monitoring the upcoming events, not the past events, because there's limited seating at these, and I always register early, and it's important to do so, because if you wait till the last minute, there may not be room at the end.
It's often standing room only at that event. And I don't know that it's up yet. I could be wrong about that, but we did video the event this year.
Cool.
And are trying to make it available for those that, but it's a lot of video. What is it? A 3-hour event? So we're working on it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, and the other reason we brought up content is that's what we're going to talk about now. Credible news and trusted content. So, I mean, I'm not a news guy. I do generate a lot of content. I try to make it valid, which is why you're here, because, you know, I use your stuff. I use some other sources to validate where I'm going, just on the marketing side of things. So when you look at the most trusted sorts of content, what should you be looking at, or as a contractor, what should you be doing?
Well, when we asked about it this year, and it was similar results last year, and it is third parties. Third parties rule the day in terms of sources of content, whether it be a third-party research firm, whether it be an association. it's an outside organization and you are not creating the content yourself as a contractor, because that is viewed by federal decision makers as being biased. So you need to partner with a credible outside third party to develop and help publish that content.
What if it's a recognized thought leader in a very defined niche? Is that considered an outside source? I know that wasn't part of the study.
You know, I would imagine it was not part of the study. I would imagine it would be if the content that's developed, whether it's a white paper, a webinar, or an article, or whatever the content pieces end up being, if it comes from that individual versus XYZ contractor writes an article and quotes that individual in it. It's not the same.
No.
And just a recent story of a client that I was talking to, actually not in the federal space, outside the federal space, they were working on a video, their own video, and I was doing some consulting with them around that and what the content should be. And in the course of doing that, part of their content was a news story done by NBC, one of the news shows. And I said, you know, you don't need to do your own video. You've got the content to tell the story. You've got this third party credible source, the NBC news program, that is telling your story for you.
Was it about that company?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You don't need to spend, you know, $250,000 developing your own video. You've got content already. So companies need to remember that. You know, if you've got third party coverage, whether it's a news outlet or it's a research piece that's been done by a third party, leverage that rather than creating your own, because it will be viewed much more highly.
One of the things I recommend for my clients, I do a lot of Google alerts for various topics that I'm researching for clients. And when I find articles or blog posts that are germane to what the client does and not talking about a competitor, I say, post this.
Absolutely.
And comment on it.
Absolutely.
You know, what's right, what's wrong, what's missing, highlight the good, the bad, and the ugly, but comment on it.
Have you ever heard of Marcus Sheridan, Sales Lion?
No.
Great. If you ever have a chance, check out his website. Great story. He used to, and I am not remembering the name of his pool company, a number of years ago, and he started writing reviews of pool companies, all of his competitors, and he would put it out there. And
Swimming pools. Yeah, okay.
And he was not afraid to talk about the competition. He was not afraid to say what was good about his competition. And he just, for that company, built an incredible trust and a following. And the business just soared because of this, being transparent, sharing content, and not being afraid to tell a story.
David Merriman Scott has tons of those stories each edition of the New Rules of Marketing
and PR. Not telling a story about yourself.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, regardless of the market, when Lisa and I went to the Marketing Sherpa thing, we went to a 2-day gig?
It was.
Yeah, 2 days on how to develop content that you can make profitable.
Yeah,
for your company, there was all kinds of companies there. There was a guy from Ohio who did his self help stuff. You know, your house guy. Projects.
The handyman guy.
Yeah.
I've never forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah,
he made more money off of the
his videos
than he did.
Yeah, working,
subscribing. You know, having people subscribe to his website. Anyway, it was fascinating. But you know, back to trusted sources in within the federal government, and you and I have been seeing this, Mark, since way back when I worked at GTSI and you and I first started working together. But recommendations from peers and colleagues still top the list. It's number one in terms of most trusted source of information.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that would be hard-pressed to change over the years. So the takeaway for me for the government contracting community is then to always position your content as educational and encourage readers to share it. So, you know, make it easy for your content to be shared with their colleagues. Because again, that's going to be more well received than if it's coming directly from you.
You think one of the things that pisses me off is when I'm reading a blog or something, and there's, you know, there's no share icon, so you can't
yes.
put it on LinkedIn right. or tweet it or face, you know, nothing.
That's a no-brainer. It should always be there. Always. Yeah. We also looked at the big movers. We did see some differences here in terms of big movers over last year. Where is the biggest momentum? And it's all about white papers and webinars. They showed the biggest increases year over year. And interestingly, the biggest decrease year over year in terms of trusted content was opinions posted online by peers and colleagues. So different than recommendations from peers and colleagues. This is opinions that are posted online. And I really think that our current political climate has contributed to that result this year, that people are skeptical of what's being posted on Facebook and elsewhere.
I wonder if that applies, though, to somebody that you've been following. You know, like when Bob Gourley writes something online about some trend in cyber, I take that as gospel.
Right.
You know, as opposed to person Y who I've skeptical about and they post something and I'm going
or someone you've never heard of
I've never heard of.
So I think you're probably right. An existing known and trusted
source. Back to the peer recommendation, you know.
Yeah, and that actually be an interesting thing to include though next year's study, Mark, something that's a little bit more specific that addresses that question.
Well, you can also do some custom studies for clients, you know, who are the most trusted sources in these hot areas, health, IT, you know, cyber, CDM, IA, you know, across the board.
Yeah.
There's always thought leaders out there, and they aren't going to be, you know, household names for you and me. But if you're in information assurance, you know who's in that top tier and who's the wannabe with the fake credentials.
That'd be a great question for the spring content study.
There you go.
Maybe something that we include.
Cool.
And you know, since we were asking about trusted content, we did have to ask about fake news this year. So, and 66% said that it has had some level of impact on news organization credibility. Not surprising. And that stat is even higher when you look at respondents from defense agencies. 73% said that it's had some level of impact. And that aligns pretty closely with what we're seeing with the general public perception. 78% of Americans feel that fake news has damaged the overall credibility of the media industry. So seeing very similar trends or results in the federal space. And, you know, my guess is this combined with, as I mentioned, easy access to a variety of different news outlets through our digital devices, this is what's driving that sort of increase in media consumption overall over last year.
Cool.
It's got to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get into social engagement, but let's do it in the last segment.
Sure.
So we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. If you can't tell, I'm here with my good friend, Lisa DiZutti of Market Connections. You can find her at marketconnectionsinc.com. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Lisa DiZutti of Market Connections, and we are discussing her recently released 2017 Media and Marketing, Federal Media and Marketing Study, and we're up to the social engagement portion. So
yeah, and it's actually a nice follow-on to the content discussion that we were having, because social media is a great vehicle for engaging your target audience, building that relationship and sharing content with them, your content, and then driving them to, you know, your website, microsite, or wherever else you want them to go to engage with you further. Now, we had three sites in the study this year that took big jumps, statistically significant jumps: Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And Facebook, probably not surprising given the age demographic of the federal audience. So that continues to be a very popular social media tool. You know, YouTube continues to grow. federal marketers have got to have some sort of a video strategy as part of their mix, I believe. And I agree.
Completely.
And I've said it for the past couple of years. You know, it's not going to go away.
You and I need a video strategy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Cobbler's children have no shoes. But, that's got to be a part of the mix. It's not going away. It's going to continue to grow. And then Twitter took another big jump this year. And I have to say, I believe it's the Trump effect. It's the preferred form of communication from our president. And I think that that has had an impact on the number of people that are utilizing Twitter, whether you like them or not.
I do a lot of push when I find something that I think is germane to the people who read my stuff and the stuff I push out, I tweet it.
Mm-hmm.
I also put it on Facebook. I put it on Google Plus, and I usually find a half a dozen or more groups to put it in on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a social sharer.
I think that Twitter's becoming much more of a mainstream tool. We're just seeing it continue to grow in terms of usage. It had been lower.
It was dying before Trump.
Yeah, and lower in the federal space just because I think a lot of restrictions that they have to get things pre-approved.
And agencies have Twitter accounts, but
yes.
NASA's probably still got the biggest following out there.
But again, I do think that, consuming tweets, retweeting is happening on personal digital devices.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And those that like to say that's not happening in the federal space or it's not a good tool in the federal space, the data just doesn't bear that out.
Yeah. Now, as a communication tool to feds, I don't think it's effective. As an information sharing tool with feds, I think it is.
Completely agree.
Okay. So let's migrate from social to our other favorite topic.
Yes.
Which is events.
Events. Yes. We've been tracking event attendance with this study since about 2012. And this year, I think we are finally seeing that decline in attendance start to flatten out. We're holding at 50% year over year, last year over this year, for those who say that they don't attend any events. Zero. Still 50%, but at least,
didn't drop.
It wasn't higher. So yeah. That's how many attended zero events. So it's holding steady at 50. We did see a slight uptick in those that are attending four or more events. And, I'll be really interested to see what happens over the next couple of years. This may be the new normal, or we may be at some sort of an inflection point, and we may see the increases in the number of events that are attended over the next year or two continue to increase. When we looked at webinars, we saw very similar results in terms of an uptick in that 4+ category. And then when you use the study data, and you isolate IT roles, you see an even greater consumption of events. So they're consuming even more events. And I still think, it's going to differ, and the panel supported this at the live event. It will differ from event to event. But generally, overall, I think the community is seeing stronger event attendance.
Yeah. So one of the things I've seen is, a lot of companies doing their own events and then moaning about nobody shows up.
Yeah.
Well, partnering with either a media outlet or a company like Mike Smoyer's Digital Government Institute.
Yeah.
Michael produces a lot of really good,
really great events.
Yeah.
We have clients
and webinars.
We have absolutely, and we have clients that use him for that, and they are very, very happy. So he does a great job, and the benefits of that, and we did an event survey. I guess it was late spring, early summer, and it speaks to exactly what you're talking about, Mark, and. It doesn't exactly relate to the media study, but just let me quickly share some of what came out of that, because I think events are so important in this community. Federal decision makers prefer full day events to a multi-year half day. I think multi-day event too much, half day not enough. They got to get permission to get out of the office anyway, so they want a full day. That's their preference. Breakfast and lunch events are preferred over dinner and cocktail events. Cocktail events always sound fun. No one comes. So stay away from private personal time. Have them during business hours. Large trade shows as well as the smaller roundtable events were top event format preferences. Federally focused, this is kind of a no-brainer, but bears repeating, federally focused events are preferred over commercial events. So make sure you have that federal focus. And this is exactly what you're talking about, Mark. Federal decision makers want content from multiple vendors. The one man or one woman show, the custom event that's done by a single contractor is just not worth the trip for folks. They want events to be customized to their agency, and they want to be able to consume content from multiple vendors when they go. So that's, I think, what makes a DGI type of event so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's delivering good content, and it's being delivered from multiple vendors. But if you are doing a custom event, and I'm not saying contractors shouldn't do a custom event, but to your point, partner, bring in your partners. You know, there are ways to address their need to hear from multiple vendors, even if you're doing your own custom event.
Yep. So. Yeah. Yeah. So so we have a couple of minutes left. Anything else on the...
On the event side, the only other thing I wanted to add, and I'm sure you hear it too, but let me tie it back to survey results. Top reasons for attending an event, how do you get them there? They want to learn something new and expand their knowledge base. Those were the top two reasons. And I hear almost on a daily basis, either I hear it or I get an email or I get a tweet, come to this, that, or the other event. And it is so broad and so generic. I have no idea what I will learn or why I should go. And, you know, you've got to give that whiff on what's in it for me. What are they going to learn? Specifically, what are they going to learn? That will help get attendance up at your events. I was talking to somebody at the media study event, and it was a marketing person complaining that a salesperson internally had come to her and said, "We're gonna be at this event. You have to tweet it out. Here's the date and time." She's like, "No one cares. Why should they come? Just because we're going to be there is not enough to get them to our booth.
Tweet
Why
it out.
Should they come?" Yeah. So just make sure you're being specific about what they're going to learn.
Now, if you have somebody, you know, if it's a cyber event and you get Bob Gorley to tweet it out, then people
maybe they'll pay attention. But we do have a webinar on the event results, and I think a lot of folks will be interested in that. It's going to be on December 13th, and everyone can register on our website. A lot more detail there around events.
MarketConnectionsInc.com. So we have a few minutes left here, so give us some takeaways from the study, Lisa's advice for, you know, any contractor.
A couple of them. I think one, contractor should take advantage of the fact that media consumption is up across all media outlets. So, you know, you may want to broaden your media plan and take advantage of being able to increase your frequency. So that's one. Sort of at a more strategic level, I think it's all about differentiation and capturing your audience's attention. It's more important than ever because people are looking at so many different outlets. There's so much clutter, so much noise. And so you have to differentiate and be careful about the media choices that you're making and make sure that they're suited to your target audience. You know, understand what your customers' pain points are. Articulate a strong message in the right media outlets. This study can help you choose the right media outlets. It's not going to help you choose the right message. That's a different type of research that you need to do.
But you can help with that.
I can help with that. But you have to do both. The point is you have to do both. You have to have the right message, and then you have to put the right message in the right media outlets. You cannot do one or the other. No.
What?
No. And if I could tell another quick story of a major oil company who was doing a big radio push in the Washington area, and we were doing a tracking study for them because they were spending so much on the campaign. And so we did a baseline. We went back in about halfway through, measured it again. They were not moving the needle at all. Perceptions had not changed at all, which is unusual. So we said at that point, what's your radio mix? Let's see what stations are you advertising on. Of course, they were using an agency outside of the Washington area.
Right.
They weren't on any of the right stations. And so we introduced them to this study data and made some recommendations about changing the mix, changed the mix, ran the campaign for 6 more months, made huge increase in changing perception. So got to have the right message, from the right outlets in order to change perceptions in the market.
And the right ad agency. If you're not dealing with somebody who's familiar with this market, this is a grossly inbred market. If you don't know where the breadcrumbs are, you're never going to connect the dots.
That's absolutely true. And that was a perfect example of that.
Yes, it is. Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. You can find all this stuff at marketconnectionsinc.com. Look for the overview slides and upcoming events.
Well, it was a pleasure to be here, Mark, as always. I always love it. And I'm wishing you and all of your listeners a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. It'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, it will. All right. This is not my day job. If you need help with, I don't shape messages for companies. That's Lisa's job. But I can help you deploy your messages in a variety of ways. I've written marketing plans for Fortune 500 companies as well as mom and pop IT shops. If you need help with LinkedIn, I am definitely the guy. So drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.